Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, leaky black. Matt Norlander is here with me. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. You have consent. Don't forget while you're here. Also, subscribe if you haven't already to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel. Let's get into it. The story of the weekend, I think, is Terrence Shannon Jr.'s return to the Illini program after being suspended by Illinois following his arrest tied to a warrant detailing a rape charge. The fifth-year wing pursued and obtained a temporary restraining order that was granted on Friday. Illinois immediately reinstated Terrence Shannon to the team. He did not start on Sunday against Rutgers, but he did lead the team onto the court, came off the bench, played 28 minutes in an 88-63 win over the Scarlet Knights. Terrence Shannon received a nice ovation from the crowd when he checked into the game with 17:36 remaining in the first half. Before we discuss it, here's what it looked and sounded like.
Brad Underwood. Here comes Terrence Shannon.
Quincy Carrier at the line for the Illini. Shooting two.
Dead leg. What'd you make? Keep this simple to start. Of Illinois using a man who was arrested for rape less than a month ago against Rutgers on Sunday. And what'd you think of the reception he received from what seemed like an adoring crowd?
Yeah, it was an adoring crowd. That's not really that much of a surprise. We've got a situation here in men's college basketball that is unquestionably just a tad uncomfortable here, and there is no simple solution right now because we have no resolution to this matter overall. I will mention something off the top here to give a little more context to how we even got to this point. So, agree or disagree, I'm just going to give you the straight facts on why we got to the point on Sunday where Terrence Shannon Jr. was allowed back into the lineup. As far as this university was concerned, then we can get into whether or not Brad Underwood and that athletic department should be playing him. So when Terrence Shannon Jr. got indefinitely suspended per university policy because he was arrested after an accusation of rape, at that point, Terrence Shannon Jr. had attorneys, and they determined to take this to the courts because they felt as though his personal rights had been violated. I believe it's the 14th Amendment. Let me be clear. I am not a constitutional lawyer, nor will
I thought you were.
Not even close. I will not try to pretend to be one on this show. I'm just telling you what, in talking to some legal experts, how this has been explained to me as of late. So what they did was they went to this judge in Illinois, Douglas County judge, and they basically said, listen, he has had specifically because he is a high profile athlete. He has an accusation against him and he has not been proven guilty of this yet. And because he has a limited window because of who he is and where he plays, Illinois is not allowing him to pursue potential earnings that could be lost as a result of this very serious allegation. So the school should not have taken that right away from him. It was a civil complaint, not criminal, not attached to the criminal case. And so the judge looked at this and on Friday said, I agree with this argument, Terrence Shannon Jr., because he has not actually gone before A grand jury has not indicted him. He has not had to stand before a judge yet and say plead guilty or not guilty. None of that has actually happened yet. The judge, from a civil standpoint, said, I'm going to grant you the temporary restraining order. Illinois should not have indefinitely suspended you based on the circumstances of the case right now. And it's because he is such a high-profile athlete. The way it was explained to me by Mitch Gilfillan, who is a former college basketball assistant and now is a working lawyer, if this had been someone who was a bench player anywhere else, this temporary restraining order probably would not have even applied, but it is specifically because of who Terrence Shannon Jr. is that from a civil standpoint, he was then given the TRO. Then you get into the matter of whether he should be playing or not. That's a whole other can of worms that we're obviously going to get to here. The Illinois, you know, treatment that he got, it's not terribly surprising to me. The poll question to start the show here is, are you okay with Terrence Shannon Jr. returning to play for Illinois? Because as we even go with this, I see cases being made in the chat on behalf of both of this, because one person is saying Illinois not allowing Shannon to play and then him being found innocent is equally horrifying to him playing and being found guilty. Both of those are true. This is not an easy situation. It's obviously very tricky. He has a scheduled hearing in about a month. And if we get to that hearing, then we might know whether or not he is actually going to face a formal charge. Will a grand jury find enough to indict him here? I know Illinois fans listening and watching are all too familiar with the case because they've read every single thing about it. But it still strikes me as a bit awkward, to put it lightly, that that he was playing on Sunday, considering the backdrop of everything that's tied to him in the case right now. And to be clear, the allegations against him.
Regardless of whether the temporary restraining order should have been granted or not, I disagree with the ideas that have been trotted out. Like, the judge quite literally determined that Terrence Shannon Jr.'s livelihood on some level is being irreparably harmed by this suspension, right? Mm-hmm. And so you undo the suspension until he can have his due process. That's the idea behind this in you know, the simplest of terms. I would argue that the suspension is not what is doing irreparable harm to him. You know what I think is doing irreparable harm to him? The fact that he was arrested for rape. That's why he's falling off of mock drafts. It's not because he's not playing basketball the past few weeks. It's because he's been arrested for rape. Because he was accused of something by a woman, and law enforcement officials investigated it and decided, we're going to pursue this. We're going to arrest this person for rape. So I just disagree with the premise. I don't believe the suspension is what's doing the harm. The arrest for rape is what's doing the harm. And before we get too into this, and boy, we're going to get into it.
Okay.
I do want to start by saying, or continue by saying, I obviously have no idea whether Terrence Shannon did what he's accused of doing, right? Just like Norlander is not a constitutional scholar, I am not an investigator of sexual assaults. I don't know if the charge is valid. I've read everything there is to read. I've talked to people familiar with the case. At least from my perspective, and Norlander, please disagree if you feel compelled to. I've talked to some people, and anybody telling you it's clear what did or did not happen on this night is probably out over their skis just a little bit. Would you agree with that?
I personally would, as I tend to give the benefit of the doubt to victims, alleged sure. victims in this kind of case, and we need to treat this an accusation, an allegation of this kind of matter. It would be foolish to just take one side or the other, particularly at this stage of the case when there's still so much to be determined.
That's my point. These situations are often complicated. This one seems to be complicated. Because on one hand, you have exactly what you just hinted at, which is a woman has accused Terrence Shannon of violating her with his hand. And there is a theory by some in this country, and this is what you were hinting at, that it is very important to always believe women when they accuse men of sexual assault. Always. That's the word people use. Always believe women. I say this as respectfully as I can say it. I'm not trying to rile anybody up. Logically, that just makes no sense, because what that purports is that no woman has ever falsely accused a man of sexual assault. And that's obviously untrue. All right. Studies do show that it's uncommon for a woman to falsely accuse a man of sexual assault, but it's not non-existent. That does happen. And it's important to remember that as we discuss the situation, while also recognizing, because here's the other side of it, it is possible a young woman spent Sunday afternoon watching a man she says raped her get a standing ovation during a basketball game. All of this is ugly.
Yep.
And I just want to make sure that's clear right from the jump. I don't know what happened. So everything else I'm going to say today should not be considered a judgment about whether Terrence Shannon is innocent or guilty of rape or a good guy or a bad guy in general. I don't know. The only thing I do know is that Terrence Shannon has been arrested because there was a warrant for his arrest for rape. This isn't merely an accusation. It started as an accusation, but then law enforcement officials investigated it and concluded they believe there's enough evidence to issue a warrant for his arrest because they believe he raped a woman. He's been booked. He has court dates on the calendar. And Illinois has a policy that automatically triggers a suspension when a player is arrested and booked, not just accused, but arrested and booked for all intents and purposes, charged with this type of crime. That's why he was initially suspended. So I think it's pretty brazen for Illinois to then run Terrence Shannon out there under these circumstances just because he got a temporary restraining order. Because after talking to multiple attorneys about this in the past, I was left with the understanding that a temporary restraining order does not force Illinois or any other school facing these types of situations to do what Illinois is doing. Now, let's stop here for a second. Norlander, obviously, the temporary restraining order is what triggered Illinois reinstating Terrence Shannon to the program. Yeah. I get that. But no TRO, far as I know, requires Illinois to actually let Terrence Shannon lead the team out of the tunnel, play 29 minutes on the Big Ten Network, even get into the game for a second. Do you have a different interpretation?
No, I don't. And this is where Josh Whitman, the athletic director, Brad Underwood, the coach, we will see how the story develops. This could lead to a situation where Terrence Shannon Jr. is found not guilty. There might not even get to a point where there's even a grand jury that can indict him, or it goes the exact opposite way, and he is. We don't know how this is going to end, but I would suggest that in playing him, you are opening yourselves up not just to obvious criticism, but potential real significant backlash and consequence down the road if it does not go this way. I have not talked to Brad Underwood about this case. Frankly, he wouldn't even talk on the record about it. I wouldn't think anything beyond more than what he's comfortable talking about in the press conference. And frankly, he's going to default to his AD here. But having covered the sport now for a decade and a half plus, and this is far from the first, unfortunately, far from the first instance we've seen where a player has been accused of something. Now that the tenor in 2024 versus what it was 10, 12, 14 years ago is obviously different. I would be led to believe that the people at Illinois believe that Terrence Shannon Jr. will ultimately be found not guilty in this. Otherwise, they're incredibly stupid. You would be so stupid to play him under these current circumstances if you thought there was a halfway decent chance this was not going to go Terrence Shannon Jr.'s way and he was going to indeed be found guilty of the crime that has been alleged against him. But even short of that, Parrish, to play him and to play him so quickly, and maybe even using the TRO is a little bit of a cover. And it's, you know, to be clear, the reason why he sought it was why I explained it before. It is not criminal in nature. It is more about who he is at this time in his life as he's trying to get ready to go and play in the NBA. It's obviously an uncomfortable scene, an awkward scene. Illinois fans, I know you're all in on your guy here, but if it was someone else in the Big Ten, would you be feeling the same way?
Of course not. Get out of here. So, like, if you were playing, who is Illinois' biggest rival in the Big Ten?
Well, it's got to be Indiana, I figure.
Okay, they're playing Indiana, and I don't even want to put this type of allegation on the name of an Indiana player. That's not fair. Somebody clip it and have fun with it. But Indiana player is arrested. There's a warrant. He's booked. It's rape. All right? Indiana suspends him for a few weeks. Guy goes out and gets a temporary restraining order and is given a standing ovation by Indiana fans when he checks into the game at Assembly Hall. You're an Illinois fan sitting at home on Twitter. What you tweeting? What you tweeting? Then shut up. You know how you feel about this. Up until it's your guy. And again, I'm not making any judgments on innocence or guilty. I'm just saying people don't play under these circumstances. You ready for this? Dead leg. There was a million games on Saturday, games on Sunday, games on Friday, games all last week, bunches of them. You can look at the schedule if you want to. Name me the other Power Conference school. And I only frame it this way because like there could be some dude ranked on a team that's 333rd in the country and he's actually facing a rape charge and I just don't even know he exists. Do you know another Power Conference school that was run onto the court, let out onto the court this weekend by somebody who is less than a week, less than a month rather, removed from being arrested for rape? Do you know anybody else playing under these circumstances?
Obviously not. No.
Arterio Morris was charged with rape at Kansas. They kicked him off the team in the preseason. Yeah. Nobody else plays under these circumstances. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
And what some Illinois fans will tell you is that, well, you know, what are you going to do? It's a temporary restraining order. You don't have to play him. You do not have to play him. As I've said previously, there is no federal judge who can alter or influence Brad Underwood's rotation. Historically, coaches are able to give minutes or not give minutes to anybody for any reason. No TRO requires Illinois to put Terrence Shannon into a game or to let him run out there and lead the team onto the court. Those are decisions Illinois is making. So I'll just default to the statement the athletic director released on the day that Terrence Shannon was arrested. He said, "We take these types of allegations and charges seriously." All right. Well, you didn't today. I mean, you didn't today. You did when he was arrested. I believe it was late December. But today you did not have to play him and you chose to. He is still accused of the exact same stuff, still facing the exact same charges he was faced with in late December. You did not have to play him today and you chose to. That's a decision. If you're comfortable with it, that's fine. But let's call it what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now we'll have to see if this case gets a next stage in terms of the allegations against him becoming an actual charge, which could well require a grand jury to find enough to indict him. That is scheduled for as late as, I believe, February 23rd. That's a full month from now, and we'll see how this story, I guess, progresses from here, or if it doesn't. We might have a non-update between now and then. We'll have to wait and see. The poll question on this episode and the live chat on YouTube was, are you okay with Illinois playing Terrence Shannon Jr. under these current circumstances? It is 53% no, 47% yes. This does seem to be, and the poll results there obviously reflect that, it is an issue where people are on both sides of this, because there are some who will say you could be falsely accused of something. And this case, if it ever went to trial, will take 6, 8, 12 months. Could take 2 years to wrap up. Should someone that could be innocent in a situation like this have their ability to be just taken away from them by a charge that could be entirely false? You know, so the people that are coming down on behalf of Terrence Shannon Jr. are saying innocent until proven guilty. Although, to be clear, that has nothing to do with whether or not you should be playing basketball.
That's the thing stupid sports fans say every time something like this comes up, but it's always a stupid thing sports fans say.
Yes, yes.
Innocent until proven guilty is what will keep you from being sentenced to prison. It does not keep you on a basketball court. Stop being dumb just because you have a Twitter account.
So that's where we are on this. And I mean, it's not an easy one here for sure. And to me, the decision, I'll put it this way, if they decided to sit him, at least in the short term, after so soon after the TRO, exercising a bit more caution wouldn't have been the worst thing, in my opinion. But he's back, he's playing, and they are going to ride with this moving forward. And again, this is a presumption on my behalf, but I'm just looking at where everything is right now. Someone even in the chat mentioned this. The AD specifically has a law background. I will be under the working assumption until the AD says otherwise that I have to believe he thinks that Terrence Shannon Jr. will ultimately wind up not being prosecuted under this, and that's why they're taking this chance.
That's fine, but when they released the statement, they didn't say, we have a policy that says when somebody's, there's a warrant issued and somebody's arrested for rape, then we decide to look into it, and if they get a temporary restraining order, then we'll look into it a little more, and if we think they're ultimately going to be found innocent, then we'll just keep playing them.
Right.
That ain't what they said.
I know.
On December 28th, they tried to stand strong. This is what we stand for at Illinois. And on Sunday, that came crashing down. If you're comfortable with it, it's fine. It ain't got nothing to do with me, but that's who you are. That's who you are. You're the school playing a guy who is still facing a rape charge. He's not facing an allegation. This is an allegation that was made months ago and was investigated, and they brought it to the level where they felt it was necessary to issue a warrant and arrest him. If you're comfortable with it, that's what it is. Then that's fine. I mean, or it's not, but like, you know, just what I'm not going to get caught up in the bullshit that other people get caught up in. Like, well, what are you going to do? It's a TRO and innocent till proven guilty. Shut up. None of that makes any sense as it pertains to this situation. You didn't have to play him. You certainly acted like in late December you wouldn't under these circumstances, or anybody under these circumstances, but you decided to, perhaps because he projected as a first-team All-American. We'll leave it here. I'll ask you this question, then we'll go. No way to know for sure, but if Illinois' player that was arrested for rape was the 10th leading scorer instead of the first, do you think he's played today?
No, for two reasons. One, for obvious reasons, and two, he wouldn't have been given the TRO to begin with because he had his name, image, and likeness had no value. The judge wouldn't have seen credence into...
Okay, let me take it another step. 10th leading scorer today at Illinois is granted a temporary restraining order after being charged with rape. Does he play today?
I mean, I can't read Brad Underwood's mind. I would lean no in that case. I believe you think the answer is no as well.
Yeah. Yep. I think he's playing because he's awesome. And sometimes being awesome at basketball is enough to make people overlook other things. That's a truth as old as time. You want to talk hoops?
We got a fun story. That's a not so fun story. We have the most fun story of the weekend to talk about after this break.
Big Z is the new sensation at Kentucky. We'll discuss the freshman from Croatia next, and John Calipari's Wildcats in general. But first, let's get a word from our partners.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Let's see if I get it right. Okay. Zvonimir Ivicic.
Yeah,
Ivicic.
Ivicic. I think it's Zvonimir. So like the Z and the V, they really just, it's a slick on-ramp there. Zvonimir Ivicic.
Yeah. Zvonimir Ivicic. Norlander, you know I ain't gotten much use for an 18-minute read, but I'll tell you one thing.
Yeah.
I do love it when you put a pronunciation in the second paragraph.
And that column was a solid 4-minute read, my man.
I got through the whole thing. I just wanted to compliment you because the first thing when I see Zvonimir Ivicic.
Zvonimir Ivicic. Let's try. You know what? Let's try this again.
Zvonimir.
Not Zvon. It's Zvon. It's
Zvonimir.
Zvonimir Ivicic.
Zvonimir Ivicic.
There we go.
Zvonimir Ivicic.
There you go.
This is harder than you think from Mississippi.
The column says, just call him Big Z.
Big Z. Hey, I was thinking about going with ZI.
Why?
Like KD.
ZI now.
Yeah.
Z works, and I'm also trying to make the Croatian sensation a thing. I put that in the column a couple times.
Well, I tell you, the first thing when I see, hey, this guy's come off the bench, he's doing a thing. The first thing I go is, man, I'm going to have to figure out how to say this dude's name.
Yeah. Well,
Where am I going to do that at? And then, thank God you got it right there in the second paragraph. Thank God. Thank God for you.
I said, you can just call him Big Z. This is a fun one, man. He comes off. So real quick backstory, because we're not going to bog this pod down. Had played in European ball and kept his amateur status despite playing in professional leagues. This leads to an elongated process. I remember Kentucky fans asking, coming and finding me like in August, hey, is he going to get cleared? He eventually gets cleared to get enrolled in Kentucky, and it's good in Kentucky's house there. And then the NCAA takes 75 days to clear him. Word finally comes out Saturday morning after like 72 hours ago, Kentucky fans rallied enough money to apparently, I didn't see where exactly this is in relation, proximity. proximity to the NCAA Eligibility Center, but they had a free Big Z billboard gift cleared, which if this had popped up, not even just a week ago, because that would have probably influenced our verdict, but if you'd asked me like the week before Christmas, is Big Z going to get cleared? I think I would have leaned no. Thank God they cleared this guy, man, because I wrote a column on it. We'll link it in the description if you want to read it. He was a mini revelation. They didn't need him for the entire 40 minutes there. Kentucky had no issues with Georgia. Georgia actually came back late. The game was not as close as the final score indicated, but he hops off the bench, makes his big debut, and earns standing ovation for this guy. And it's a behind the back pass. It's a block shot. It's one made three after another. And then he hits his fourth three and he goes Jordan in the 92 final shoulder shrug. As he just trots back there, the building's on fire. I watched every single possession he was on the floor in that first half, and I don't know if there have been five more joyous, ecstatic moments since Calipari got there inside Rupp Arena. It was incredible, and then I'll let you take it. But the crux of my column was this was an amazing moment. We should all be pissed after the fact that the NCAA made us wait 75 days to see this dude ball like this. And now Kentucky has the deepest roster in the country. And though defensively it's got some issues, and it's not a top tier defense, it's not a tier two defense. Offensively, from a depth standpoint, from a talent standpoint, you tell me they're trotting out a 7-2 dude who can hit shots from 23 feet like it's nothing. They can play with anyone on that side of the ball in the country. To me right now, it's a tier one of three national title contenders. And is this an overreaction? Maybe it is. I don't care, man. They got talent across the board. Purdue, UConn, Kentucky, then draw a line. Then we can have a discussion about everyone else. But to me, that's what Avisic's eligibility and inclusion on this team means, because holy hell, they might have, and you want a real overreaction? I got it for you. Because Reed Sheppard's been the best freshman in the country. He's coming off the bench. They might have the two best freshmen in the country coming off the bench at Kentucky this season. Incredible story. Love, Cena. What were your thoughts about what transpired in Lexington on Saturday?
Levanamir.
There you go. You're getting there.
Loved it. What a scene. Poor Mick Cronin, by the way.
Oh my gosh.
He can't buy one experienced player out of the portal, and Kentucky's putting up billboards outside the NCAA.
That's true. Not a good night for our guy, Mick. I got it in the whip around at the, but yeah, that, if you really, you know what, I hadn't put that juxtaposed against each other, but it's true, man.
Mick can't go to the portal because he ain't got no money. And Kentucky's just like, let's throw a billboard up outside the NCAA, see if we can get Zavonimir cleared. And they did. It's a real, I'll say what everybody else has said, it's a real flaw in the system that he could be held out until January 20th, but then ultimately cleared to play. Like, they're like, oh yeah, we've looked at everything now. You're all good. And I know somebody's going to try to connect this to the Terrence Shannon thing. Well, if you thought it was a shame that he was held out, why? One of these people is facing a rape charge and the other one's not. Let's not conflate the situations. He missed 16 games. He'll never get those back. That stinks. But I'm not sure. Okay, here's the thing. People always say, this is crazy, and I'm one of them. This guy is ultimate. There's no timetable on anything. You just reach a conclusion when you reach it, and you reach this one in game 17. Everybody thinks this is a terrible situation, all right? I don't like to just complain about things. I like to think about them and go, okay, well, how could we do this better? How could we do this better? What's the fix? Is there a fix?
I don't, dude, you're asking me to get inside the halls and walls.
I don't know that there's a great answer.
I don't know. They obviously they don't want to have a situation where they've got someone who could have potentially been making money at whatever level, decent living, whatever, playing they don't want a professional coming in and playing amateur athletics. And so because of this, it took this long. It's a joke. It took this long.
That's my thing. I don't think it shouldn't take this long.
And then they clear him. Mike White and his staff did this huge scout on Kentucky. They had no idea this dude was playing. They were done. The word came out like 4 hours, 5 hours before they tipped. Can you imagine like these poor GAs and like third assistants that suddenly had to scrounge up a scouting report on this dude after not thinking they'd have to face him? Georgia, which had not lost a road game entire season, trying to maybe cobble together like a last four in kind of resume there. They were toast. I don't know how you expedite this. It has long been an issue. Parrish, you have been writing about this. Dude, I remember you writing about this stuff before I got to CBS in like 08, 09 when we were talking about guys not getting cleared there. So they, and I understand, and just for our listeners, because Pachipi obviously understands this, football, men's college basketball, they're the two sports that bring the most attention when it comes to eligibility issues on all this stuff. But the eligibility center, they're worried about every damn NCAA sanctioned sport under the sun. So the list is just endless, and they're going through. And as it's been told to me a couple times over the years, there is not a priority. Hey, this guy plays basketball Kentucky, but this guy plays soccer in the Big Sky. It's just one name after the next. We get to it when we get to it, and we got to dig in. But that being said, at a certain point, like Charlie Baker, as NCAA president, I'm sure he would agree with this, even though he doesn't have anything to do with this case altogether. You can't allow a season to drag literally into the second half of a campaign and not have answers to it. That did happen here. It worked out well for Kentucky. And as a benefit now, the ceiling has been raised, and we might have one of the five most entertaining players in the sport that quickly. We'll see if he can be consistent. I want to be clear about this. I had a line about that in the column. We'll see if, like, 3 games in, then 7 games in, then 13 games in, if he's really going to be that kind of guy off the bench. But I'll just tell you right away, immediately, ball of fun, can shoot it, good passer, little flat-footed, but what he brings to them is another really good big. And yeah, Kentucky, hello. They were already a fun, good team. And now, again, the defense is an issue. We'll save that for a different show because they got to clean up a lot of stuff there. But on the offensive end, holy hell, man. They are really coming together, and credit to Calipari because he's built himself quite an interesting roster. He's never had one quite like this.
When he first became a prospect in the sense that, hey, here's this guy and it looks like he might come to college, I asked a couple of people about him, like, is this somebody that should be on my – I will tell you, the initial reports I got, for lack of a better word, were like, yeah, he's talented. But it was not like he's going – whoever gets him has got an All-American.
He might not be. We're poking fun. But all I know is it's Kentucky hoops. This dude stepped on the floor.
Yes.
And looked like he was college hoops as Jokic. Okay, that's what it was. What is going on here?
Hey, I hope he is. And everything I saw on Saturday was encouraging. I'm just wondering. I'm not predicting. Like, is that as good as it ever gets? And maybe not. Is that as good as it ever gets? But like, he might just settle into, you know, that was a hell of a debut, but that ain't consistently what it's going to look like. I don't know. But he was fabulous. Just to circle back to there's got to be a better way to handle these types of situations. I'll stand on that. There's got to be a better way, but it's not clear to me what it is. And it's not clear to the NCAA, because if it was, they would have already implemented that. I would just, like, they've already got 1 billion committees. I'd get 1 billion and one, and I'd form a committee to try to figure out, is there a better way we can do this? Because a guy who at least looked in limited minutes on Saturday like he could be one of the more enjoyable players in the country just missed more than 2 months of the season while we were trying to determine whether he should be allowed to play or not. Is there a better way to do it? For Kentucky, that's what I think they should – that's a question that should be asked among people who have the power to actually do something about it.
Yeah. And then real quick, I'll just mention the fact that, like, Ivicic, you know, he played 16 minutes. He had 13 points, 5 boards, couple of assists, 3 blocks, 1 foul. He got a technical for hanging on the rim. It didn't even look like he knew what he was doing. Like, when it was happening, like, that split second before I heard the whistle, my brain, I was like, he might get it up. Yep, he got a T. Doesn't know what's going on there. So he really got the full college experience there. But I'll mention this. Antonio Reeves, he had 21. Trey Mitchell had a game-high 23. DJ Wagner had another really good game. So it's the pieces around him that are coming together. And then Nada, throw this up on the screen real quick. I love this. I don't know if you saw this, but Antonio Reeves, who is really putting it together as of late, he's a part of this huge win. Kentucky's had 90 plus points in like 4 straight games. The offense is incredible. Our dude hits up the local bowling alley with his you got to kind of pinch in there if you're watching on video here. That's him at the counter. He's bringing bowling bag in hand. I love the fact that one of the better players in the SEC is apparent. This is like an hour and a half after the game ends, Parrish. I love it. Antonio Reeves, dude, literally, dude. I want to know if he's watched the Big Lebowski. Big time stuff. I love seeing that pop up late on Saturday night. You get a huge win, and you're like, guys, no. We're getting to the lanes. Over the line! Love it.
What do they call it when you go bowling, but they turn out all the lights and they play music real loud?
I think that's called global.
It was definitely not global. In Memphis.
They turn off the lights.
Something else.
Someone in the chat help us, but they turn off the lights and play what else?
It's like strobe lights and lasers, yeah. And they play loud music, and it's called something bowling. We're going something bowling, but I don't know what it is.
Okay.
I keep wanting to say cyber bowling, but I think I'm just thinking of cyber bullying. I think I'm thinking of cyber bowling.
I thought it was glow bowling. I don't know. It's not go bowling. Glow bowling.
Yeah, no, I know. It's not glow bowling.
Cosmic bowling.
That's it.
It is. Okay, there we go.
Cosmic bowling. Special shouts to Brady. That's exactly right. I only go cosmic bowling.
Okay.
That's what I wanted to say. That's why I took us through that entire exercise. So I could say I only go cosmic bowling.
All right. Cosmic bowling. Here we go. Love it. Good stuff on you, Kentucky. Well, they got a roadie against South Carolina Tuesday night. We'll get to that at the end of the show.
I did move Kentucky into the top 10 of the top 25. And one, I was certain Kentucky fans would be thrilled. I thought they'd be like, GP, you got us in the top 10. I thought they'd be thrilled.
You were dead on arrival on that one.
I was. They're not thrilled.
Come on, man.
They're not thrilled. And I thought they'd be thrilled because there's not a single computer that has Kentucky in the top 10. And there's not a single way to look at what Kentucky's done since the season started on November 6th and say that's a top 10 resume in the country. The only way you get Kentucky into the top 10 right now is if you just say, "Ooh, buddy, I like their players."
And I do. So
I know, I do too. I do too. That's why I've got Kentucky in the Final Four. I like their players too. But at this point in the season, as I've said a million times, I'm more interested in ranking you based on what you've done than based on what I think you might be able to do if you really get it going. All right. Yeah. So I want you to, just as an exercise, because you're a smart guy, you follow the sport closely. I know Kentucky fans will appreciate this. I want you to make the case for Kentucky as a top 10 team right now, but you cannot use a phrase similar to, "I just think they're really good," "I just think they have great players," or "Go Big Blue."
You put me on the spot right now?
Yeah.
Making the case.
So. Okay, while you're looking at it, I will hit you with a trivia time. Can I hit you with a trivia time?
Hit me right now.
Trivia time.
Yeah.
There is only one team in the entire top 20 of the top 25 and one with fewer than 5 wins in the first 2 quadrants and a quadrant 3 loss also on the resume. Can you name that team?
It's got to be Kentucky.
Oh, you're so smart. The only one.
Yeah.
Only one in the entire top 20.
Since it's a Sunday and people listen to this on Monday as the AP poll continues to refresh every Monday. A reminder, I bring this up just for our listeners. Parrish is building out his top 25 and one from a resume perspective. It's more built like a bracketology than a in the moment power ranking, which tends to be what the polls are. Kentucky, in terms of how it's playing, it has one loss since December 2nd. If I was doing the power ranking, shouts to David Cobb for taking over that this season, I would have Kentucky top 10 because it is trending that way, including a win over a North Carolina team that registers as top 5 level right now.
That's a good one.
That's why I would have them top 10. It really is the win over UNC, which continues to age well. Carolina got a win over Boston College and now has a 2-game lead in the ACC. We'll get to that at the end of the show. But that would basically be my case. This team has one loss in overtime at Texas A&M. That is a top 35-40 level kind of team. It's an understandable loss, and that's the only one that they've got since December 2nd.
Oh, let me be clear. I don't think it's crazy for somebody to have Kentucky in the top 10.
I know that because you literally do.
or even in the top 5. I don't care. Yeah. I don't think it's crazy. If you just want to land on, I think Kentucky's awesome. But that's all you got. It's the only reason you can say it is you just go, "Man, I just love their team," because I love their team too. And you go, "Man, I think they got better players than everybody else." Because you ready for this? So do I. I think they got better players than everybody else. And I think they got more of them than everybody else. We'll get into a conversation at some point whether they got too many of them. But I think they got more of them than anybody else. And I think theirs are better than anybody else. I love the team too. But I've made it clear at this point for years now that this is the way I do things. If you do them differently, that's how you get Kentucky into the top 5 or higher than 10. But and that's the thing. I'm not saying any of this to say it's crazy if you don't think Kentucky it's crazy if you think Kentucky should be higher than 10. I don't think it's crazy if you think Kentucky. I just think it's crazy if you can't understand why Kentucky is 10. That's the part I think is crazy. But whatever. Go Big Blue.
Let's loop around. We're 37 minutes into this. We've talked about one game, and it was a wild Saturday.
Oh, buddy. We had a triple overtime game, too.
We did. We got to get to it.
All right. Another word from our partners?
Partners!
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel, streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
All right, Deadleg. Bounces around the rest of the country.
A lot to get to here. Let's focus on the Big East to start. Okay, UConn wins at Villanova. Seven straight wins. Tristan Newton had a game-high 25. 19 came in the second half. Villanova, third loss in four games. And I'm going to give a shout to Jay Wright because he was in studio Saturday afternoon, made the trip back to Philly to watch this game in person, and then was back in the New York City studios at CBS on Sunday afternoon just to watch Nova. Couldn't quite pull it out. That was a big one, but that was the least significant result of the day. I'm starting with that. Number two was Marquette winning at St. John's. All five starters for Marquette got into double figures. Oso Iguodaro had 17 points, only missed two shots on the day. Marquette shot 54.2% from the field. It's their second straight game when they've cleared 54% from the field. And Tyler Cola continues to play well. St. John's, it was so close. Did you see the video of Patino collapsing when the shot on the game didn't go in? Did you see him fall to the ground there?
He was on the verge of like the top 25 and then he gets COVID and now it's two straight losses.
I know, but he did make it back in time for that. A really entertaining game, the Marquette game, and we'll get to the Creighton game here. The noon window on Saturday was just outstanding. That noon to 2:30-ish window was fantastic there. Good on Marquette, but what we saw here was the preseason top three teams come out with wins, and not only did they come out with wins, every single one of them was faced with a road game. And the theme we've had here through the first couple of weeks of January is a lot of ranked teams, a lot of good teams are getting knocked off on the road. Did not happen in the Big East. UConn wins at Villanova, Marquette wins at St. John's, and then holy hell, Creighton won at Seton Hall in three overtimes. It's the fifth triple overtime game we've had this season. There were five total last season, so I seem to believe we're going to get at least another one of these before we get out of here. First time Creighton's ever won a game in three OTs ever, GP. 91-90. Trey Alexander hit a three with 28 seconds to go that gave Creighton the lead for good. This game swung between, obviously Seton Hall's going to get it, obviously Creighton's going to get it. Both fan bases were so annoyed because the official, it was a rough whistle. I was watching the whole thing. I'm with you. It was a rough whistle, but you know what? You had calls go for both of you, calls go against you. At the end of the day, Creighton gets out of there with a 1-point win. It had 16 lead changes and 10 ties. There were six players with 20 or more points. And good on Creighton for getting this. And you know what? To me, it was Kalkbrenner. He had 28 points, game high, and to go with nine boards. And they need him to be that kind of consistent if they're going to be a true factor at the top of the league. Your thoughts on what we saw happen? This was the lead of our Friday show. Big weekend for the Big East and the six best teams all facing and squaring off. Games lived up to the hype. Creighton Seton Hall was one of the five best games of the season so far.
Yeah, it was a fun weekend in the Big East. I did drop Seton Hall just barely. To 26th in the top 25 and one on Sunday morning after the loss. They will move up to 25 on Monday morning based on Memphis losing on Sunday and falling out. Memphis lost at Tulane. And this guarantees, of course, that somebody will look at the top 25 and one on Monday morning and then immediately tweet me and go, so Seton Hall loses at home to Creighton and then you move them up? No, they move down. They moved down after they lost to Creighton. This is a daily thing. So they moved down on Sunday morning. Now it's Monday morning. Memphis was ahead of them. Memphis dropped out. Everybody moved up. It's not complicated. It's not. It's just not hard to follow.
Just send out the link and don't look at them.
It's just not hard to follow.
It's not hard not to look at the mentions. Do it for me. Do it for me. Just don't look. Just don't look.
So Creighton gets a win, a good one. Marquette gets a win, a good one. UConn, this occurred to me. Road teams wouldn't want every one of those games, huh?
Yeah, I said, did you hear me say that before?
I mean, yeah. Patrick Mahomes is playing over here.
I know you're not really dialed in right. Listen,
Patrick Mahomes is playing over here, buddy.
We were not going to make our audience wait until the end of Chiefs Bills. We're going to get this done well before the first quarter and the Chiefs Bills is done. And Josh Allen, here we go. 4th and 1. And they get the first down. Also, some of you are listening on this Monday and they already know the score of the game. All right, continuing.
I want to say one thing about UConn.
Okay, go ahead.
They go to Villanova. I've been in studio with Chris Walker, former Villanova.
Yes.
Great. All week. Oh, buddy, he can't talk. He can't. He said, GP, don't worry about your top 25 and 1. Villanova's going to take care of UConn on Saturday. I said, okay, see, walk. Okay. I'm just going to hang in there tight with the Boilermakers then. He said, don't worry. I know them UConn fans are on your ass right now, but don't worry. V's up. They're going to get them on Saturday. I said, okay, see, walk.
V's up.
He said, V's up. I said, okay, see, walk. And then I turned this game on. It was 11-0. Yeah, I don't know.
There you go. Yeah,
I can't do things with my hands very well. God,
you are a mess right now. Look at this. Is that arthritis? Well,
why can't I do better than that?
V's up.
I need separators.
Oh my God. Look at your right middle finger. Oh.
Thank God I didn't go to Villanova. It would have been a disaster.
Oh my gosh.
V's up. Well, V's up. So I said, okay, see, walk, okay.
I can't even say what else. Yep. All right. Yeah.
And then I turned the game on. And it was 11-0. No escalators tweeted.
What did you see the tweet? I missed it. No.
Somebody tweeted, 4 of UConn's 5 starters have scored already. And no escalators quote tweeted and said 0 of Villanova's have scored. Hey, it got close. But UConn did win. On the road, 66-65. I do still have Purdue number 1 in the top 25 and 1 based on the idea that the Boilermakers have 7 quad 1 wins. That's more than anybody else. Oh. They have 11 wins in the first 2 quadrants. That's more than anybody else. I will say, just because I'm always hitting you with this stuff, it's only fair that I say this.
Yep.
Do you realize Purdue now has a quad 2 loss?
By nature of how did the math break on that?
At Northwestern slipped to 78 in the net. Only top 75 on the road. So Purdue now does have a quad 2 loss, at least temporarily, and UConn does not. So just like I said last week, I don't think it's crazy to vote UConn number 1. I think Purdue has the better resume, but it is now tighter if you care about that quad 2 loss, becoming a quad 2 instead of a quad 1.
I'm going to tie this up here. Shouts to Rob Anderson. He's the sports information director at Creighton. He is the fellow. If you don't know what a sports information director is, they are the truly tremendous people that help communications between media and coaches and players. They are the liaisons that they make college sports go. He sent me a note here. He said, Creighton leads all Big 6 teams in net point differential in road games this season, plus 55. That's actually a pretty good stat in Creighton's favor. So it's plus 55 on the road this season. That's the best margin of any Big 6 team. Trivia time!
Okay.
There's a non-Big 6 team that leads this category nationally. Trivia time! What non-Big 6 team leads the entire country in point differential on the positive end?
I'm going to guess. Just guessing.
Why would Rob Anderson send this to the pod? Why would he send it? Trivia time. Who would it be?
I'm going to say Princeton.
Princeton is 2. UMass Lowell, plus 84. Mississippi Riverhawks.
Mississippi Riverhawks.
In road differential. Rob Anderson, that's a great stat. We appreciate you. I love those nuggets. That's good time stuff there. Let's continue to whip around. You mentioned Purdue. It won at Iowa. The biggest news actually of Iowa related. Good job on Purdue. They continue to rack up the wins. But the biggest Iowa news was Caitlin Clark getting into a collision after Iowa got beat on the road at Ohio State. And a fan bumped into Caitlin Clark. And I was out and about doing family stuff. So thank God I missed this discourse. But apparently this started as, oh my God, is the most famous college basketball player okay, into Caitlin Clark's a massive flopper, et cetera, et cetera. so thank God I missed all of that. And in all sincerity, like, obviously, thank God she's okay. And that it wasn't anything bad, but yeah, it was an accidental, boom, boom, bang, bang play, I guess. And, everything was all good and copacetic, but I figure we at least must mention it's,
of course,
nearly just, what would have been the biggest non-NFL headline of the weekend had Caitlin Clark suffered an actual injury.
That's right. I think we've got the video, and what you'll see is her trying to get off of the court, and then she is, I understand, like bumped into is one way of putting it. Run into by a larger person is another way to put it. Let's just watch it. We can look at it together.
Okay.
Boom.
That's
a moving screen, dead leg.
That it looks like. Here's what's weird about this, and I didn't catch the game live. Was again doing some family stuff. There's already an assembly on the court at this point, so I don't know if they had gone through handshake lines and then Caitlin Clark's just looking to get out of there. It wasn't like a massive. She also wasn't. She wasn't playing Frogger there and bobbing and weaving as like a huge flood of people. It was just, it happened to be, she started sprinting ahead of her teammates and then someone else was eager to get out there. Just a little bit of a weird scene. That's all.
Do you ever have this? Because I walk a lot in New York, right? Back and forth to the studio. I got about a 13 minute walk, you know, a few times a week. Yeah. And every once in a while, you'll get in a situation where on your sidewalk and there's two people walking like this.
Yeah.
Two ships passing each other in the night.
Yes.
But one person, like we are on a collision course.
We've had this discussion on the show before, I'm pretty sure. Yes.
Okay, but it happened to me like 3 days ago, and it was a woman. And we made eye contact. We're about 10 feet away from each other, and we're on a collision course. And it becomes increasingly clear to me that she is not going to move, that the only way to avoid bumping her is to actually step out of my way. And I had this half-second moment where I was like, you know what? I should stand my ground. And then I was like, no, I'm not going to just bump into somebody, a stranger. That's crazy.
It's on you. It's on you to move.
I know, but why if I would not have moved, I don't think she would have moved. And that bothered me. Okay. Because I felt like she was willing to have a collision with me.
Well, you dodged her.
And I feel like if I wouldn't have moved, she would have said, hey, why'd you just walk into me? But I would have had just a right to say, hey, why did you just walk into me?
That's the New York way. I'm walking here. That's the New York way, man. That's just how it goes. That's what
I
you
just don't
do.
Think is I think both
I'm
of you
walking here.
I think anytime you're headed for a collision, both people out of a courtesy should swerve slightly in different directions so that you both show each other you're making an attempt to not hit each other. You're doing equal work. I think that's fair.
All right, fair enough. Let's continue. Yeah,
well, let me say this. Did you see? Okay. Fox Sports, I believe, we should say Caitlin Clark after the game. She said, I was a little scared, but I'm fine. I'm fine. Everything's fine. And then Fox Sports retweeted a clip from Matt Painter from earlier in the year, I think when Purdue lost at Nebraska.
Yes.
Okay. You saw this then. First off, Matt says,
I remember Painter's comments when he said, we keep getting our, you know, I'm about to say this. So sorry for interrupting.
No, it's fine.
He said, we keep getting our,
right now.
We keep getting court stormed, and can we just have a better job of like organizing? He said something like that, so I'm assuming that's what was
right. Right. He actually said, I didn't realize this. Tell me if you realize this. He said every one of our freshmen, sophomore, and juniors have never lost a road game without having the court stormed.
Yeah, and then someone said that that's actually technically not true. There was one time.
So he's a liar.
He's a liar. I think,
right.
Was it Indiana last year? Indiana didn't do it, but with the exception of one game. But otherwise, yes, they every time they've lost on the road in the Big Ten, they've been court stormed.
Indiana should have.
Well, that blue blood program wasn't going to
happen. Yeah. It's tough.
That's why it doesn't happen.
Blue blood. On one hand, you're the fourth best program in your state. You want to storm the court when you beat the best. On the other hand, you're supposed to be a blue blood. You can't do it. Tough situation. It's a tough thing to balance. So what Matt said after he got through lying.
Yeah, exactly.
What Matt said was, hey, listen, he said something that I have said for years and wrote 9 years ago, which is, can we all tell me this? Okay, since we're having fun with hypotheticals today, here's one for you. Caitlin Clark gets run over. And she is
laughing.
Okay, she hits her head on the court. Bam!
Okay.
Now she's concussed. All right?
Yeah.
She's a modern day Tua. Okay? Now.
See that coming? All right.
Well, you remember he used to get concussed.
I'm aware. Keep going.
Okay. So that's what's going on. Would we start tomorrow? Would the Big Ten start putting in policies start talking about it tomorrow? Would we all be having a national conversation about court storming tomorrow if Caitlin Clark was seriously hurt?
Well, we are having a national conversation because this is a national podcast, so we are having that now. But had she been injured, it completely changes situation. So what Parrish is about to say is we shouldn't have to wait until that happens to have that conversation. I don't necessarily disagree with you. I also don't think, having seen this work in other places, having proper court storm protocol and prepare for it. Hey, we're having, you know, it's not a, listen, if you're Cincinnati and you beat TCU, I understand how you can't possibly prepare for that because who could ever think your kids would want to storm the floor after beating TCU as we saw a few nights ago. But if you've got a top 10 team coming in and you think, hey, well, let's be real here. Can we set proper protocols in place? Because it can be done, but the Big Ten has not gotten it done yet. And I wonder, I bet you, because of what Painter said and now with Clark stuff, I bet you that Tony Petitti, that commissioner, that there will be discussions on this sooner rather than later now.
I have long said, and it is true, because I realize somebody's going to say this. Hey, Parrish, you wrote a column 9 years ago saying one day something really bad is going to happen on a high profile game. And guess what? It's been 9 years, buddy. I got you. I got you. But it is untrue that these things never lead to disasters. There's a guy in a wheelchair right now who was paralyzed during a court storming. You don't know his name. Neither do I. You don't
there
know
was also
game.
A guy in a wheelchair who did court storm at NC State famously, and we gave him shine on the pot a few years
ago. I know. That's the problem, is that sometimes this is awesome.
Exactly. Oh, there's another person in the middle of a game. Arkansas State Saturday. I don't mean to get off track.
Yes.
Got onto the court with an I Love MILF shirt. I don't even know what that was about.
Okay, here's my rule. Okay, listen, I'm trying to figure out how to stay consistent with this and not contradict myself. Okay. Here's my rule. If you're in a wheelchair, go ahead.
Okay.
If you're in a wheelchair, knock yourself out, man. I don't care. But able-bodied people should not be on the court unless they are participating in the game. In all seriousness, what Matt said is eventually something very bad is going to happen in a high-profile game, and then we will all do something about this. We'll say we can't do this anymore. So why? What are we waiting on? You know?
Yeah.
Like you don't wait till you have a stroke to start taking cholesterol pills. Dead leg.
Okay.
You don't wait till you have a heart attack to start taking blood pressure pills, if that's what that means. So why are we waiting until something really bad happens in a high-profile game to do what we know we're going to do when something really happens, really bad happens in a high-profile game? Why wouldn't we go ahead and eliminate the possibility? I know what people are saying. Hey, GP, how would you do it? This is what I suggested 9 years ago. You just make the punishment clear and you enforce it. You don't need a million security guards. That's what people say. You're just going to line the court with security guards? No, you know what you're going to do? You're going to tell everybody there, if you come onto this court after this game, you'll be arrested. If you're a normal fan, if you're a student, you will be expelled. Don't do it. And if they do it, then arrest them and expel them. And then guess what? People will go, well, geez, I can't get expelled from school just to run onto a court. I won't do that anymore.
Would that work?
Yes, it would. Expel? What? You let Nebraska storm the court against Purdue and then expel 80 students. Expel 80 students. It'll never happen again.
If he doesn't take it off and can't be identified on camera, then what do you got?
Oh, we can identify him.
With the horse mask? You know?
Yes.
That's what happens there. Or a bunch of V for Vendetta masks. Students just throwing them on there.
The only people
There are loopholes.
The only people who are immune from suspension or being for being expelled or arrested would be people in wheelchairs and people in horse masks.
Okay.
We'll allow them, but everybody else, you got to go to jail. You got to get expelled. I'm joking, obviously, but not about that. I really do believe if you just say, guys, we're telling you, if you get on this court, you're expelled from school. I agree. Somebody will test it, but when they get expelled, and it becomes like a headline, Nebraska's expelled 44 students for storming the court, that will not happen again.
I've got a story on this with crowd control and et cetera, but we're running late. I'm going to save it for a different show when court storming comes up again. Plus, we got Bills Chiefs we want to get to. Couple more here, and then we'll wrap up. Iowa State won at TCU. That's just notable because Iowa State just took it to the Horned Frogs, and that's a really impressive win by TJ Otzelberger's guys. Let's talk Big 12 real quick here. Baylor lost at Texas. Rodney Terry got dragged a little bit first of all, game ends with Baylor got caught in the wrong defensive situation.
Oh, and then
Tyrese Hunter makes a great play to hit it at the horn and they win at the buzzer. And Hunter had 21 points. He played well. It was another a really, really good game. Texas finally has a top 25 win this season. But when it happens, Rodney Terry responds as if he just clinched an NCAA tournament bid or even better. And so when you juxtapose that against what he just did in the previous game when they lost in the same building to UCF, well, he opened himself up to plenty of criticism. He did apologize in the presser afterward for what he said. That stuff made PTI, and I think it got more attention than he might have even anticipated for a Texas UCF game to get nationally. And so he understood it. But Parrish, our guy might have been a little happy, too happy. The celebration might have been, hey, I thought he goes into games expecting to win. That was my thought. We're Texas. We go on, we expect to win. And when you celebrate like that, you're telling me you were hoping to win. I feel like Rodney Terry might have been hoping to win on Saturday against Baylor.
Here's the problem. There is nothing wrong with Rodney Terry celebrating a win that happened in that way over a recent national champion and ranked team. The problem is that Rodney Terry said what he said the game before, and then it just comes back to hit him in the face. The problem is what he said the game before. It's not what he did this weekend. But when you say what he said the game before, we don't jump up and down like we won the national championship. Oh, yes, you do, buddy. I just watched you. That's the problem. But like the play, that's an amazing way to end the game. And my amazing play from Tyrese Hunter, the finish, like hanging, that was like Ja Morant-esque, like just hanging in the air.
Yeah.
Like Ja does that all the time. He just hangs in the air longer than everybody else and then gets the ball up. That's what Tyrese, I'm not comparing him to Ja Morant, obviously, but that's what the way he just hung in the air longer than everybody else and then got the ball up at the rim. Incredible play. You cannot let him catch the ball like that.
Dude.
That was the problem. They let him catch it and get downhill immediately.
Yes. Full head of steam. Good handoff by Dazoo. Baylor was in the wrong spot situation there. And hey, listen, that's the latest reason why I love the fact that college basketball does not have the call timeout advantage to half court, because we get plays like that. That was an awesome play. You don't get it if you get it at half court. And more often than not, College Hoops is giving us endings like that. One more Big 12 note. Texas Tech was down 17 at home, came back, beat BYU. It's still keeping pace atop the league. Yeah, Grant McCaslin doing an awesome job in year one. Little this, little that to wrap up before we look ahead to Monday and Tuesday. Syracuse beat Miami at the buzzer on a three-pointer. Miami is going from Final Four team to GP. That team might not be making the turn. Oh, you down? KenPom, if you're listening to the show, I know you're going. You down? You down?
I like, that seems disrespectful.
Well, I'm just saying, you down. Syracuse gets a big home win. Good on them. Tennessee had no issues with Bama, which is eye-opening only in that the predictive metrics loved Alabama as a top 10, top 12 level kind of team. Tennessee, I wasn't in on that, but you know the data was the data at this point. And Tennessee, it was not even a game. The Vols with a reaffirming win and kind of a quiet one considering what that matchup was and then a lot of the attention that Kentucky got in that conference. Arizona, speaking of teams coming back from big deficits, Arizona was down 19 at one point to UCLA. UCLA blew it. Arizona was able to get the win. Mick Cronin had more regrettable stuff afterward. Did you see the clips that were shared after in the hallway when he met with the small media scrum or no?
Did I see it?
Yeah. Did you see what he said or no?
I read it. I did not see it.
Well, he had two things. One, and I don't know who the media person was, but someone asked him.
It's always Ben.
What? Maybe it was Ben Bulch. Yeah, I'm guessing. But there were multiple.
Every time I read a Mick Cronin quote, it's from Ben.
Okay. Well, Cronin had just like a spare comment of like, I'm not surprised you're going to ask me that kind of question. What are we doing here? And then Mick, he had a quote that was something, and I'm paraphrasing here, but it was something along the lines of, because he got asked about the environment. And he was like, crowds, buildings, you know, they don't matter to me. You're gonna have to ask Tommy. He plays in here every time. Like my team, this is why my teams play well on the road. And I'm like, Mick, you just lost by 46 at Utah. Like, what are you talking about right now, man? I don't know. Every week, man.
Mick is like, I love him. I love Mick Cronin.
Like, listen, he looks unhappy with his life. He doesn't look like he's having fun coaching the team. And I don't even know if he would be on a top three list for Louisville or not, but I'm just telling you, I think this is going bad enough here where it actually has hurt his candidacy. If indeed Louisville would be looking at him and if indeed he would even be considering Louisville, it's not good at all.
I will say this. I think he's complicated that, like, everything else aside, I think he's complicated his candidacy for Louisville if he wanted to be a candidate for Louisville. But somebody told me recently, you can look this up. The buyout's pretty massive and it would cost a lot of money to get him out of there right now. So keep an eye on that. The quote I had seen from Mick was something along the lines of, I guess it was Ben, somebody asked him, is it hard to miss? It was just a question like, is it hard to win a game on the road against a good team when you miss 3 3-pointers or 4 3-pointers on the same possession? Because apparently that happened at some point. And Mick was like, it's hard to win on the road against a good team when the team shoots like 20 something free throws in the second half. It was like one of those. Mick, he's a great basketball coach this season, notwithstanding. On a personal level, I like him a lot. He strikes me as the type, and he might even agree with this, when things are not going well, rather, he can't fake it. He can't just stand up there. He can't just stand up there and be cordial and answer the questions the way he is very much operating like a coach who hasn't dealt with something like this
in a long time or ever. And he doesn't really know what to do. He's frustrated and he's in it. And he doesn't. Some people have it in them. They can just sit down and say, hey, this is part of the job. I got to sit down now and I got to face all these people and they're going to ask me questions and some of them are going to be stupid, but I'm just going to answer them all as best I can. And he's clearly having a hard time doing that.
Yes, absolutely. A couple more notes, then we're going to preview the week ahead. And the American on Sunday, Memphis lost again. Tulane got his first win over a ranked team in 25 years. Tigers, man, well, they might not have a top 25 resume. And then FAU got taken to OT, but they wound up winning. And then some milestones happened. One, as the process in the process of this podcast getting taped, shouts to Northeastern's Bill Cohen and Northern Iowa's Ben Jacobson. They both became the winningest coaches in their respective leagues over the weekend. And earlier on Sunday, just less than an hour ago, Stanford's Tara Vanderveer passed one Mike Krzyzewski for the all-time wins in the history of college basketball. And she now sits at 1,203, and she is still going. Big ups to Tara Vanderveer. That's an awesome, awesome moment. Caitlin Clark's stuff will probably be the biggest headline to come out of the weekend in women's college basketball. Frankly, should be Tara Vanderveer, because that's an incredible legacy she's built there, and she's not done yet. Krzyzewski had that record for what wound up being just a short amount of time. Now he sits second to her.
Only one more game that I'd like to touch on, and then we'll get to looking ahead. It's just the one I wrote about for the lead to Sunday morning's top 25 and one, and that was Auburn 82, Ole Miss 59. As we predicted, Ole Miss took another loss. Ole Miss will be out of the AP poll on Monday, and I'm skeptical they'll ever get back in it. This might be one of those deals where they just got off to a rough start. A wonderful start, largely because of a not too challenging schedule. They got the big win over Memphis, but maybe that doesn't look as good as it looked at the time. And now they're just settling into what they're going to be, which is a bottom half SEC team. So they take a second straight blowout loss, they lost at Tennessee by a big number as well. Auburn's now 16-2, 5-0 in the SEC on an 11 game winning streak. Top five at KenPom, top 10 in most computers, but in possession, did you realize this, of zero quadrant one wins?
Oh, I did. I did not realize that, but it probably explains why Auburn's received some attention, but it has not yet had a moment under the spotlight yet, and that would indicate why. Has not had the game where we're either talking about a big game that it just performed in, or we're hyping up a game that it's about to play in.
What was neat, not neat, but just helpful, is the way I do the top 25 and one is every morning or the night before when things are done, I get the order of the teams, and then I go, okay, what do I want to write? What can I say? I need 300-500 words about something. And I decided I'm going to write about, I was going to write about Zvonimir. Is that still right?
Zvonimir Avisic, yeah.
Zvonimir. But then I saw you did that, and we don't need two of those. So I said, okay, what else can I write about that? And I found Auburn, because I thought this was interesting. I was like, okay, they're clearly good. They're beating the hell out of everybody. They're 16-2. They're undefeated in the SEC. They've got incredible computer numbers, but they've got zero quadrant one wins. Like, that's not normal. I was like, after I figure out what I'm writing about and what I'm trying to say, I will then go to the AP story and just look at quotes that come from press conferences and see if there's anything that fits with what I'm doing. Literally, the first quote from Bruce Pearl was, my players came up and said, coach, do you believe in us now? He said, because I've been skeptical. Because we haven't really beat any ranked teams or many ranked teams. And he's like, I've been skeptical myself of what we are. He basically was saying the same thing I was writing, which is I know we have strong computer numbers. I like my team. We're winning games by big margins, but we have not beaten big signature programs. But he did say, but you know, beating Ole Miss, a team that as a tip-off was ranked in the 20s, at least in the AP poll, like now I'm starting to believe a little bit. Now I'm wondering what we got. But they're 0-2 in quadrant one, 6-0 in quadrant two, 5-0 in quadrant three, 5-0 in quadrant four. That's how you get to 16-2. There is, first, a couple fun trivia times for you. How many Division I teams have at least one quadrant one win? We've established Auburn has zero. How many teams have
at least one? It's a good one. And Auburn doesn't have one. I'll say we're at, blind guess is 64.
96.
96 teams.
Okay. 96 different teams have at least one quadrant one win, including Florida Gulf Coast, which is ranked 257th in the net with an 8-12 record. Yep. If they've got the FAU win. FAU got the overtime against UTSA, but won.
Yep.
So Auburn has zero, but 96 schools. Auburn is top five at KenPom, but zero quadrant one wins. And there are 96 schools with at least one quadrant one win. There's only one other school. Oh, it's a second trivia time.
All right.
Connected to the same topic.
Okay.
You have to say you're ready.
I know I don't.
Are you ready?
Let's go.
Are you ready?
I'm ready. Just
there's only one other school in the top 30 of the net. Only one other school in the top 30 of the net sitting with zero quadrant one wins right now besides Auburn. Who is it?
It's not Kentucky because it beat Carolina.
It's not Kentucky.
I'm going to say Bama.
No, Bama has one.
Bama has one. Memphis.
No, Memphis has one.
Okay. Okay. Who do we
Memphis
got?
Memphis has two.
All right. What do we got?
Alabama has two. Memphis has one. Gonzaga has zero.
I should have had that. That's, you know what? That's a bad job by me. I was just trying to squeak out of there too quickly. I should have had that.
Gonzaga's 30th in the net, zero quadrant one wins. Right now, Auburn and Gonzaga are the only teams in the country in the top 30 of the net with zero quadrant one wins. Take us where you want to take us.
All right, let's look ahead to the next two nights, and then we'll get the hell out of here. On Monday, you've got Wake Forest at UNC, and then Cincinnati at Kansas. Yes, we are going to talk Kansas's loss real quick here. Kansas lost at West Virginia on Saturday night. It was West Virginia's first win versus Kansas in seven attempts there, and that's obviously a sub-500 team. West Virginia dropping 91 on KU was certainly eye-opening there. Raekwon Battle, who at one point was waiting on his own eligibility issue, he has obviously long been cleared. He had 23 for the years. Johnny Furphy actually had himself a halfway decent game. Kevin McCullough wound up with 24 points, but yeah, Kansas now has losses against UCF and West Virginia. Those are two teams that, although they reside in the Big 12, I can't imagine playing in the NCAA tournament. And so, actually, let me bring up this poll result right now, because the Ion College Basketball Twitter account posted a poll asking whether people believe Kansas would make the 2024 Final Four. And at most recent, it is an 82-18 no split. Conversely, will Kentucky make the 2024 Final Four? That is a 55-44 no split right now. So any quickies on KU's surprising road defeat against the Mountaineers?
Well, I'd push back a little bit on Furphy having a great game. He was 4-12 from the field.
He started off better than he faded late. Yeah.
He had been playing better late. Okay, so they moved him in the starting lineup, as we've discussed. And we both, I think, I don't want to speak for you, but both think that was more out of like, we don't know what else to do. Might as well try something. So they try it, and it had been going well. He still appears to be their best option as a fifth starter with the other four that have been starting all season. But, you know, he had four made baskets and four fouls. Kansas is now down to 14th in the net, 18th at KenPom, 18th at Torvik. I have the Jayhawks ninth in the top 25 and one. Like, the resume's still okay. 6-2 in the first two quadrants, but now they do have a quadrant three loss. I've got one spot ahead of Kentucky because they're better in the first two quadrants. Both those teams have one quadrant three loss.
Not better than Kentucky. See, if I'm you, Kentucky's better than Kansas. I would just
But if you told me which one did,
resume, but I just like Kentucky, Kansas tomorrow on a neutral in the middle of North Dakota. Who are you taking to win the game?
I mean, we've already watched them play on a neutral and
in North Dakota. I know. Okay. And who was not in that game when they played?
I mean, we did watch them play. And I'm not saying that means
he was not available. Yeah.
I'm not saying Kansas was better, or I'm not saying that proves Kansas is better.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that proves when the bracket comes out, I'll have Kansas going further than Kentucky. I'm just saying, based on the way I do this,
okay,
there is no way for me to have Kentucky ahead of Kansas right now. Kansas has more quadrant one wins, same number, has more quadrant one wins, has more wins inside the first two quadrants, has the same number of losses inside the first two quadrants, has the same number of quadrant three losses, and then does own a neutral court win over Kentucky. So for me, the edge is going to be Kansas over Kentucky, but I get your point. Certainly, I think this is true. You can say Kentucky played better this weekend than Kansas.
I mean, that's not even debatable. That absolutely happened. Tuesday night, Texas at Oklahoma. OU coming off another win over the weekend there. Houston at BYU. What do you want? A Big 12 on a nightly basis. Must see TV. Kentucky plays at South Carolina.
Woo! God. You know what this is.
Okay. Your levels were way too high. I know what this is, but good God, man.
Oh, man, I just got excited when I looked at it today.
We dialed down his levels there. Jeez. I know. Does it fall on the same date, though?
No.
You looked it up?
Yes.
Devin Downey game. I was wondering if it was going to fall on the same date, because that would have been.
It's going to be 3 days short. We're going to play this one on January 23rd. It will be 3 days short of the 14-year anniversary of the Devin Downey game. 30 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 68-62 win that dropped Kentucky, top-ranked Kentucky, to 19-1. Did he need 29 shots to get 30 points?
Of course.
Yes. Is that great? Yes. Yes. Oh, yes, it is.
Here's what I'm saying.
I love that he just got 29 shots up against Kentucky.
If there's any guy that can continue the legacy of Devin Downey, it's a dude named Michi, and South Carolina right now has got a dude named Michi on the roster. Okay. Michi Johnson. And you know, like I know, we're rooting for Michi to ball out.
Okay. All right. I want to be clear. We're not rooting against Kentucky. Unless we are. Are we? No. Are we? Are we?
If you think we're rooting against him, go ahead and rewind that B block that we had there, because that was about as enthusiastic as we've been about the Cats in a while.
Hey, my mentions can't get any worse from Kentucky fans. So if you want to root for South Carolina, I'll do it. I don't care. But I don't inherently want to root for South Carolina over Kentucky. I like Kentucky. I did a video last week. I got them in the Final Four. I love Big Z. All right? But if you tell me we're rooting for South Carolina, I'll do it. You just got to tell me.
You're rooting for South Carolina. You're rooting for Michi Johnson.
Okay.
EJ Mack. And Michi goes for 30. At Arkansas. Yeah.
Pulling a Devin Downey will forever be known as going for 30 in Columbia against South Carolina.
No, not against.
And every South Carolina.
South Carolina against Kentucky. Against Kentucky.
Yeah, it's got to be in Columbia against Kentucky.
Got to go for 30.
In January.
Got to win over a ranked Kentucky. How about this? You got to go for 30.
Yeah.
Hosting Kentucky. When it's ranked, and you got to win the game.
Okay. And if you do that, you go straight into the shouts.
I don't know about that.
Any South Carolina player that gets 30 against a ranked Kentucky team in Columbia automatically goes straight into the shouts.
Got to win the game.
Got to win the game. I agree. Can't just go for 30 and a loss. You got to win the game. Okay. Let's take everything, put it on the board. You have to win the game. Yes. This is what we're going to look at. South Carolina and Kentucky played at Columbia. Let's look at it. Okay. Does South Carolina win?
It's got to be in Columbia.
Okay. Was the game played in Columbia? Yes. Okay. Next question. Does South Carolina win it? Yes. Okay. Let's move on to the next question. Did anybody get 30? Yes.
For South Carolina. Let's be clear. Yep.
For South Carolina. Yes. Yep. That person goes into the shouts.
No. And they got to beat a ranked Kentucky team.
Okay, goddamn.
It's got to be a real Kentucky team. All right, and that we've covered the criteria.
I feel like we got it. All right, we got it. We know what we're doing. Michi Johnson. We'll see how it goes.
We'll see how it goes. Last one, Duke plays at Louisville. We'll wrap it up with the Duke loss here. Duke took a home loss against Pitt, and it was Pitt's first. I know you already know. I know you are. First time Pitt won at Cameron since 1970. And not only that, Parrish, but I bet you don't even realize. I'm going to play a song. I'm playing four things right now. Okay? I'm going to play these four things. Classics. Never leaving the soundboard.
Let's go, Duke. Come on.
There's that. And then there's.
Let's go.
And then there's.
Come on, Duke.
And then there's this.
Defense.
Okay.
Let's go. Let's go.
What do these all have in common? What's this all about? Do you know the origin story?
Come on, Duke. Let's go.
Oh, sure, because they were chanting about Jeff Capel, and he was like, he's a Duke man. You don't chant about Jeff Capel. If you need to chant something, come on, Duke.
Let's go.
Come on, let's go. Mike Krzyzewski was giving students instructions on what to chant other than things at Jeff Capel, and the thing he came up with was, come on, Duke.
Let's go.
It was so good when Capel came into Cameron and they were saying, sit with us, Capel, which they do endearingly to high five-star prospects who visit and take their official visits to Cameron. And Kay didn't know what the hell was going on. He goes over and screams. And then afterward, he goes,
let's go. Come on, Duke.
That's what we needed. That's what
let's
they needed.
Go. Come on, Duke. Come on. Let's go.
So for Pitt,
come on. I don't have the students ever actually started. Come on, Duke. Let's go. Come on, Duke. Let's go. Why don't they do that?
Let's go, Duke. Let's go, Duke. Let's go, Duke. They have that.
I know, but I don't want that. It's got to be, give it to me again. Let me hear it.
Come on, Duke. Oh, you
defense. Let's go. Come on, Duke.
Okay, so it should have to be, let's go. Come on, Duke. Defense. Let's go. Come on, Duke. Defense.
Come on.
Why can't that be a chant?
No, you need that.
Okay. Let's go. Come on, Duke. Defense.
Congrats to Pitt for getting a win. Blake Hinson, oh, by the way,
legend
up on the scorer's table and
love
talking
it.
A little smack. And then, you know what? It was a beautiful vision, and the scene was incredible. There were a couple of Duke students that were giving him some well-deserved birds. It was the week of the double bird in the ACC. You had DJ Horn a few days before, and then it looked to me like a few Duke fans, they were lovingly giving him the middle finger, and I thought it was an incredible scene. And how about this? If players are going to be able, or if students are going to be able to storm the floor, then the opposing team should be able to storm the opposing press row and just jump up on a table and do that.
Let's eliminate court storming, but encourage press row jumping. You can jump on I don't mind. If I'm sitting on press row, I don't mind. I don't mind if Blake Hinson jumps on press row.
Oh, so good, man. That was beautiful.
There is nothing funnier than going on the road, beating a big blue blood program like Duke, and then jumping on the scores table and making a bunch of college kids with 35 ACTs be so mad they flip you off.
It was great stuff. And I'm sure people listening are like, these jackasses going to talk about Duke losing. To be clear, Duke fans, it was an awesome
We put it
moment.
Off as long as we could. We put it off as long as we could.
But we were saving it. We pushed off from the whip around. People are going to be like, oh, they love Duke. They save it to the end. Or people are going to be like, they hate Duke. They were jumping all over Duke at the end. Whatever, man. It was a fun scene. It was a funny scene. Your team's going to the tournament. It isn't.
So. People always think you love and hate everything. I saw one this morning that actually made me LOL. Somebody tweeted. It might have been even in the thing. Somebody tweeted. I think it was in my mention. They were like, oh, God, if you know anything about Parrish, you know he hates Kansas. Always has. I'm like, what?
Classic.
I consistently say Bill Self's the best coach in the sport. I think Kansas is going to win the national championship. Even when they go out and lose to West Virginia, I just keep saying they're going to win the national championship. But then there's somebody out there living a life who is convinced I just hate Kansas all the time.
Well, what can you do?
It's wild out there, dead leg.
That's a show.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Could be shouts to Michi, but we'll have to wait for that. Shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Terry M. F. and Eagle, legend. Shouts to Huck. Shouts to Larnell. Shouts to Blake Hinson. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including
Apple,
Spotify. There's more of us than there are of them.
Well, Duke, come on.
Blake Hinson, us. I'd bet everything on it. I'd bet everything I got. Ain't no them jumping up on that table, is he?
We're going to talk to you Wednesday. All right, that's correct. We're going to talk to you Wednesday. Reminder, Parrish is in New York studio. Wednesday shows 10 a.m. Eastern. 10 a.m. Eastern live on YouTube.
All right. Look at them. Look at those. We'll talk to you again real soon. Till then, take care.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance. Avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown, new season streaming June 2nd, exclusively on Paramount+.